From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast hosted by Paul Hanley.
Welcome to the China in the World podcast. I'm Paul Hanley. Last Friday, January 3rd, the Department of Defense released a statement saying the United States had killed Qassem Soleimani, commander of Iran's Quds Force, the de facto number two in Iran, the head of military, security, and intelligence for Iran, one of the most powerful men in the Middle East. The death of Soleimani, which took both the world and much of the U.S. by surprise, is likely to have significant implications for U.S. relations, not only with Iran, but with the rest of the Middle East and the international community. In the wake of the strike, there were significant questions surrounding U.S. motivations, the decision-making process, as well as growing concerns that it could spark a wider regional conflict. Given the rapid pace of developments over the last few days, I also want to clarify that we're recording this episode of the China in the World podcast on the morning of Wednesday, January 8th in Beijing, just hours after Iran launched retaliatory missile strikes targeting two U.S. bases in Iraq. To help make sense of how these developments are being viewed here in Beijing, I'm delighted to welcome Professor Jinsan Rong to the China in the World podcast. Professor Jin is a professor and associate dean of the School of International Studies at Renmin University, otherwise known as People's University. He's also the vice president of the National Association of International Studies, vice president of the Pacific Society of China, and advisor to the Policy Planning Office of the National People's Congress. In the immediate wake of the strike, Professor Jin published an interview providing his reaction, and so I thought it would be good to have him on the podcast to help share his views with our listeners. Jinsan Rong, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Paul, to have me here.
Before we get to the actual strike itself, I want to first ask you to help set the scene a bit by sharing some of your perceptions of how China has viewed the already ongoing deterioration that we have seen over the last couple of years in U.S.-Iran relations. Prior to the strike, tensions were already simmering between the U.S. and Iran following President Trump's withdrawal from the Iran nuclear agreement, the JCPOA. There were Iranian strikes on Saudi Arabian oil fields. There was a seizure of a U.K.-flagged oil ships in the Strait of Hormuz. There was even the shooting down of a U.S. drone. What was China's position, in your understanding, on these developments, and how has Beijing viewed U.S. intervention in the region having changed over the last couple of years, even going back really to the Iraq War?
You know, China is one of the members of a so-called 1+6 regime, right? Mm. China support the Iran nuclear deal. So we're happy to see that deal exists.
This is the negotiating, the 5+1, including the European countries, China, and the United States.
Yes, yes. So when President Trump decided to withdraw from this deal on May 8th last year, China is quite disappointed. Because from Chinese perspective, we need the situation in Middle East, especially in Gulf War, stable, because China is the largest importer of oil, right? I think now our import oil account for 70% of China's whole assumption of oil. The total amount of oil consumption should be very close to, 500 million tons a year, mm-hmm. and 70% imported from overseas. Mm-hmm. And among this 70%, another 70% from Middle East. Mm-hmm. So 270%. Mm-hmm. So we do need a stable oil supply from that region. We don't want to see the turmoil there. And China also the largest trade partner of Iran. So to some extent, We keep a neutral between Iran and the United States. Mm-hmm. On one side, definitely China want to have a stable relationship with the United States. On the other side, we also want to have a stable tie with Iran. Mm. So we don't want to see a big conflict, you know, between these two countries. So after the U.S. Withdrew from Iran nuclear deal, I think the Chinese people very, the not the Chinese people, you know, actually average people don't pay attention to that. They just care about their own, the money in their pocket, just like the United States. But the elites in Beijing are concerned about the situation.
Yeah. We could get a sense of that when the Iranian foreign minister visited China December 31st, just before the new year, meeting with the Chinese foreign minister, Wang Yi. Wang Yi was quoted during that visit as saying that China will stand with Iran against unilateralism and bullying. I'm assuming he's referring to the United States. And said that the unilateral withdrawal, this is Foreign Minister Wang Yi, by the United States from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, giving up on its international commitments and attempts to exert maximum pressure on Iran are the sources of the current tension arising over the Iranian nuclear issue. It's a pretty clear statement by the Chinese foreign minister of where, of how China assesses the main sources of the problem with regard to the Middle East, with regard to Iran situation.
On this issue, so-called nuclear program of Iran, we support the deal between Iran and other
and the
parties.
5+1, right?
Yeah. But as for the whole relationship between Iran and United States, that's too complicated.
Sure. Yeah.
I think both sides has to take their own problem. Right. You know, nobody support the, you know, the Iranian revolutionaries hijacked the U.S. diplomats.
In 1979, 40 years ago,
people blame that. That's something go beyond the international law. So nobody support that. Another occasion, the U.S. Navy hit down a civil, you know, plane, right, of Iran, and led to the death of 290 people. So China also blamed that. So, so I think as for the bilateral tie between Iran and the United States, China keep it neutral.
Yeah.
But on this specific issue, nuclear issue, people here oppose the choice of Donald Trump.
So you think foreign minister statements were more focused on the actual Iran nuclear agreement?
Yes.
He did, however, say, you know, we'll stand with Iran against unilateralism and bullying.
That term, I think, referring to another situation. You know, the second day of Donald Trump came into power, he withdrew from TPP.
Yes.
Right? And then gradually he... you know, withdraw from many
Paris Climate Accord and others. Yes.
So I think that makes people worry.
Yeah.
Used to be, U.S. is the banner of free trade. U.S. is the advocate of, you know, so-called multilateral cooperation. But now U.S. changed. As a leader of the world, the change of U.S., the impact is much bigger than any other countries. So I think China worry about that.
Yeah.
So try to maintain the value of multilateralism and try to make UN works. I think that's a goal of Chinese foreign policy now.
Let's turn to the actual strike itself. What was your own immediate reaction when you heard the news of the death of Soleimani? And what, in your view, has been the reaction of Chinese experts who follow these issues closely?
Actually, I'm now become a big mouth, you know. Most of my colleagues, they just keep quiet. They are much more clever than I. They just keep quiet.
Well, we appreciate you being a big mouth because you can join our podcast.
So, So my reaction is that it's a big mistake. It should not be the choice of the United States. You know, the small countries like Israel, they're surrounded by all the enemies, right? And their situation forced them to do something like that. But the U.S. is top leader of the world. It's not, should not be the choice of the United States. I think from any perspective, strategically, morally, and legally, that's wrong. That's a big mistake. I think the U.S. owns much more choices than small country like Israel, you know. It's better to deal with Iran in a political way, you know. Something like you deal with former Soviet Union, just wait, contain and wait, something happen in their mm-hmm. home, then you get a chance, you know. But you, actually, this is an assassination. Right.
You see this as an assassination.
Yes, yes.
Not a legitimate strike against definitely an international terrorist.
Yeah. It's broke international law. It's illegal.
So you see this as the U.S. violating international law.
Yes.
Secretary of State Pompeo was on all of the Sunday morning political talk shows.
Yes.
Calling Soleimani a terrorist, mm-hmm. describing him as a terrorist. Mm-hmm. I think he used the word several times. Mm-hmm. But this is not the way you see it.
Yeah. I think our official voice is that general ceremony be put on the sanction list by UN several years ago, but that's not defining him. The UN resolution not defining him as a terrorist, but linked him with the nuclear program of Iran, because the UN said that your nuclear program has problem, right? It's quite military oriented. That's no good. So then China agreed to put some sanction on those people relating with nuclear program, but not define him as terrorists.
In the United States, you have a range of reactions, some condemning the strike, saying, like you, it was a mistake. Others saying it was the right thing to do. But one thing that seems to be fairly common, regardless of where you stand, is a view in the United States that Soleimani was not a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that he had the blood of hundreds of Americans on his hands, and that he in some ways deserved what he got. How is it seen in China?
As I said before, between Iran and China, and the United States, China can be neutral. And we tend to believe the escalation of tension between these two players should be blamed or take responsibility by two sides, mm-hmm. not the fault of one side. That's unfair. You know, the Iran, after the revolution, Islamic revolution, they take some, you know, radical behavior. And that's one of the reasons leads to this tension. The U.S. also react very strong.
Mm.
So U.S. also should be blamed to some extent, you know. So from Chinese perspective, both sides should be blamed. And as the high-ranking officers of one side, what he did in the past just served his own country, you know? And just like CIA guys in Middle East did many bad things in the name of United States, the national interest of the United States. So the American people take a very negative perception on General Soleimani, but on their country, he's a hero, you know?
Mm.
He's a saint now. So,
I notice here in China, there's been a lot of coverage of his funeral
uh-huh,
and mourning of mm-hmm. his death across Iran. They've been covering that quite extensively. You've seen that in Xinhua, Global Times, other major Chinese news outlets covering very much the funeral.
Yeah. I think that's just nature. This news is very valuable for any news agency, right? In the saint city of Qom, there are only 5 million residents, right? 3 million came out for this funeral, right? So that's a real big news. So just nature, right?
China, I want to get a sense from you. You've mentioned from an official standpoint, China tries to remain fairly neutral. Sort of a delicate balancing act, perhaps. Because I do know China, of course, has a comprehensive strategic partnership with Saudi Arabia, which would have, I'm sure, strong negative views on General Soleimani. China has good relations with Israel, which probably celebrates the killing of Soleimani to a certain extent. How does China try to achieve this balancing act? Does it weigh in those factors of the other countries and how they will react? And how, when you're talking about the balancing act, how then do you explain the recent joint naval military exercises with the China, Russia, and Iran that took place just prior to the strike in the Gulf of Oman for the first time ever?
I think China tried to keep balance with all the parties there. So now I think China has a good tie with Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Israel.
And UAE, by the way, comprehensive strategic partnership with the UAE, Egypt, Iran, and Saudi Arabia, those four countries.
By the way, now we're talking on a new media, right?
Yeah.
And I think Israel did a very good job in Chinese new media. Their image is quite good.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
People talking about Israel, their typical image is that this guy is very clever and with very
good innovation, good, technology,
innovation.
Yeah.
And their attitude towards New China, or People's Republic of China, always very good.
Yeah.
Something like that. I think compared to their the competitor, Arabic world, they did much better job in PR.
Interesting.
I think China definitely want to keep good tie with all those players, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, and Iran. But China, generally speaking, very cautious to choose a side, you know. But recently, China did a little more than before. I think we increased, you know, arms sales in this region. So-called drone plane, right?
The DJI drones?
I think also we did some weapon deal with Iran. And we conduct some joint exercise with Sunni countries before. But it's true, the first time China sent ships to Persian Gulf recently. I think one important reason is that this joint military exercise with Russia takes some lead in it. So I think the invitation not only from Iran, but also from Russia.
I see. Let's talk about Russia for a second, because we've you and I heard some Russian analysis earlier this morning. In a sense, Russian observers think that Russia has a real opportunity to benefit from some of this chaos and instability. Number one, oil prices have gone up in the aftermath of the strike, and Russia sells oil. where China is buying oil. So Russia will benefit from increased oil prices. We've also seen President Putin was in Syria yesterday. He's in Turkey today. He's meeting with Chancellor Merkel in Russia to talk specifically about the U.S.-Iran situation. So Russia seems to be trying to take advantage of the situation to a certain extent for their own benefit. Now, against the backdrop of growing China-Russia ties, does that put a strain on China-Russia ties? Because there seems to be a different assessment of this situation where China is trying to remain fairly neutral, calling on all countries to exercise restraint. But Russia seems to be trying to take advantage of it to a certain extent.
You know, Russian stayed there for many years, right? During Cold War and after Cold War. Russia always very important player in Middle East. I'd like to put the rank of big powers in Middle East, U.S. number one and Russia number two, right? And the third should be EU. Basically, speaking, China is a layman in Middle East, right? You are a doctor degree. We just at a primary school, you know? Definitely China bear more interest than before because we are the largest oil importer from this area. And we are the largest trade partner for many Middle East countries. We earn money there. You know? We sell our goods there. And as you know, President Xi Jinping initiated the so-called One Belt, One Road initiative, right? And either land line or sea land must pass Middle East. So one thing is very sure, China pay more attention to Middle East than before. But because we are a freshman in this region, so our influence far lag behind with those traditional players, US, Russia, EU. And I noticed the Russian want to, you know, draw China in, at least give some, you know, financial support or political support or something like that. So China's changed the attitude to some extent, become a little more proactive than before. Right.
In this current situation, will do you believe China will consider sending diplomats to Iran or to other countries in the Middle East or engage proactively in discussions with U.S. officials to try to bring some calm to the situation?
I don't think China will send a high-ranking officer there in near future. China should observe, you know, keep quiet and observe. Because, you know, the public opinion in Iran is so radical at the moment. So the situation at the moment is still in the process of escalation. Perhaps someday, both sides cool down, you know? Then comes the opportunity of making peace. Then China will try to do something, but not at this moment.
So you and I have talked about your own personal views on this. We've talked about elite views. We've talked about the Chinese official position. I want to talk a little bit about, you're very active on Chinese social media. You have over a million followers on your Chinese social media. What have you seen on Chinese social media in terms of the reaction to the killing of Soleimani? And I did see some WeChat discussions about how this reinforces the need for China to continue its own development into a major power. Otherwise, China risks being bullied like Iran, was some of the views that I saw expressed on social media. And I wonder if you agree with that view, and what else have you seen on social media that you have found of interest?
You know, today China owns the largest number of internet users, right? Up to date, I think our internet users surpassed 800 50 million, and the U.S. 240 million. So that means China owns 3.5
times the
times
U.S.
of the United States. And according to my reading, there is a horizontal company, so called 零点, how to say, horizontal, 百元月, their survey told us,
Horizon?
Their survey told us, among these 850 million, they are close to 100 million, they are active users.
Yeah.
So they shouting at each other every day.
It's mostly on Weibo or
on Weibo.
WeChat too?
Yes, yes, yes. I don't know where they get the money. They just shouting at each other all day. So we have a very noisy forum. But the situation is that they are very divided
on this issue.
I think they are very divided. Some mm-hmm. people, they are pro United States. They admire the skill of assassination. There's high tech, you know. With good support of intelligence and a long, how to say, long range and accurate target attack. So some people like that. You know.
And they want China to develop similar capabilities.
Yes, yes. And then definitely there are people said this, no matter how beautiful the action it is, but it's wrong.
It's wrong.
Mm. I think there are more people criticize than appreciation.
I've also seen some social media in China and other scholars arguing that the attack will divert the aftermath, having to deal with the attack, will divert the Trump administration's attention away from China. And this will ultimately benefit China, take some pressure from the United States off of Beijing. And I wonder whether you would agree with this, and have you seen these views yourself?
I personally disagree with this analysis. You know, China, if the situation got worse, China will also sacrifice a lot. Oil price will soar. And China will get hurt. And China invests a lot because of One Belt, One Road Initiative. We invest a lot of projects there. Perhaps the money will come, right? And we also worried about the ISIS, the terrorist organization like ISIS coming back again.
A resurgence of ISIS.
Yeah, resurgence of ISIS. Mm-hmm. Ironically speaking, General Soleimani fight together with the U.S.
Against ISIS.
ISIS.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
And but now the alliances against the ISIS slipped.
It's fractured. Yeah.
So it's possible ISIS will come back, and China Xinjiang, is a very dangerous target.
Mm-hmm.
If ISIS come back and the influence of those radical extremes spread to Xinjiang, that will hurt our internal security.
I see.
So China cannot escape from this, this escalation.
Let me ask you a shift a little bit to the Korean Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's still an ongoing effort to get the North Koreans to give up their nuclear program.
Mm-hmm.
You have a good sense of this North Korea issue. How do you think the North Korean leadership is viewing this particular situation?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think it'll affect the ongoing diplomacy between the United States and North Korea?
Mm-hmm. From our perspective, we don't want to see among our neighbors, we have a nuclear neighboring countries.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely we're worried about the scenario of a new nuclear player neighboring to China. So China posed DPRK to be a full nuclear country.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely China want to resolve issue in a peaceful way, not resolved by a war, mm-hmm. right? So both war and nuclear, we don't like. But the problem is that many situation out of the control of China, right? China just part of the resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, we support U.S. to talk with DPRK directly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think, let me ask you this way, do you believe that the situation and what happened mm-hmm. with Soleimani
mm-hmm.
makes it more difficult
yes.
To achieve? I mean, there's been, an analogy would be the situation with Libya,
yes,
where Libya
yes.
gave up its nuclear weapons program.
Yes. Yes.
And in the end, Gaddafi was yes, killed yes. and his regime was overthrown.
I agree with this analysis. I think they will take a very negative view on this latest event. That will further strengthen their determination to
keep their nuclear
yes,
capabilities.
Yes, so that's and no good news for...
You've been very generous with your time. I want to end by asking a question about whether or not how you see this particular situation impacting the current U.S.-China relationship.
People here expect to see a deal in near future, right?
The phase one trade deal.
yeah.
In the next week
people,
or so.
And President Trump said he will sign a deal on January 15th,
right?
So I think... quite a lot of people, especially business guys, they want to see this very latest development.
Yeah.
Then will help China's economy to be stable.
Mm-hmm.
You all know China's economic growth slowing down, right?
And do you think that this situation with Iran
mm-hmm.
will negatively impact U.S.-China relations, or do you think it won't have much of an impact?
I don't see the immediate yeah. link between yeah. these two things, phase one deal and the Iran issue.
Yeah.
They're separate. China will deal with
separate.
These two
yeah.
issues separate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been very generous with your time.
Thank you
very much for sharing yeah. your perspectives. It's really, really important to understand Chinese perspectives on these situations, and I appreciate you spending time with us on the China in the World podcast.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you for joining the China in the World podcast. Be sure to check out more content from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center on our website.